Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, good evening. This is Terry Dodd. This is Walls in Our Minds. Tonight, my co-host, Red Beckman, should be joining us in just a few moments. And while we're waiting for our guest to call in and for Red to join us, I'd like to open us in prayer. Father in heaven, we just come before you tonight and ask that your spirit be with us during the show. We especially ask for protection for our guest tonight, who is taking a real risk by doing the things that he's doing, including coming on this program and sharing with us a lot of the research and investigative evidence that he has managed to bring forward. And we just we ask it that you make this show go smoothly. And as always, we want your message to come forward. We want your will to be done. We want to be a part of that will. And we ask that you your spirit fill our guest tonight and help him to bring a message forward that's clear and understandable. And we just really pray for a hedge of protection around him. And the name of your son, Yeshua, Jesus the Christ, we pray. Amen. Well, good evening, Red.
Yeah, I'm here.
Well, how are you doing this? Hello, Liam. This is our guest, Liam. Liam, we'll just let our guest know that that this is a name that you're using tonight, that it was probably recommended that we not reveal your true identity this evening, and maybe sometime in the future that will happen, but tonight that's not going to happen. So tonight we're going to refer to our guest tonight, Red, as Liam. And Liam, welcome to Walls in Our Minds.
Thank you very much.
I'm just going to kind of open the floor for you up to start with. We'll be asking you questions as we go along, but need for you to give us a little bit of background so that our listeners will understand where you're coming from and why we brought you onto the show and what's going on up there in Montana.
Well, this has to do with Salish Kootenai, or I guess it's the Confederated Salish and Kootenai Tribe, and their mission statement to gain total ownership and control of the reservation. I bought a piece of property from a developer, an Indian developer, about 4 years ago. And subsequently, after purchasing the land, the county government started coming after me because I was not an Indian. The land that I bought was in supposedly a legal certified subdivision that the tribal government had developed and reviewed and recorded at the local courthouse. And like I said earlier, after I bought the land and started developing it, I was under the impression that this was a tribal subdivision, and although I'm not an Indian, that the Indians were going to retain total jurisdiction and control of all the development as in a normal subdivision. That turned out not to be the case. County government said because I was not of Indian descent that they determination that the subdivision was going to be non-conforming, and as such, they were going to null and void the subdivision, and all of a sudden I would be subject to a new set of rules, zoning, setbacks, etc., on this parcel of land or lot that I bought. It wasn't a parcel. And that caught me off guard, and I started investigating. What I subsequently found out was that this is a huge conspiracy to allow the Indians to regain some land that they thought the government unjustly allowed the white man to purchase years ago when the reservation was developed. What I found out is that the deeds that they've been using will allow the tribe an ability to actually evict people from land that they thought they legally bought through an eviction process. They've deeded this land in such a manner that they never brought it out of trust. It remains in trust and not what we call fee simple ownership. Because of that fact, the Department of Interior in D.C. has advised me many times that I'm a trespasser on my own land and that the tribe can come in anytime they want and evict me. What I also found out is I'm not the lone ranger in this. We found out that thousands of deeds and thousands of acres of land are subject to the same fraudulent conveyance scheme. And that's why I'm on the program tonight, is to warn my neighbors up here in Lake County, Sanders County, and perhaps even Flathead County, that their land is at risk as we speak. And it's imperative that we get this message out. We have a water compact negotiation going on whereby the tribe is also trying to claim all the water from Canada to Butte, Montana. And, you know, and this actually, what's the word I'm looking for? It actually links up to the water compact and helps the tribe reach their goal of total ownership and control of the reservation. We have several mission statements here, and they're not, they do not deny the fact that that is their goal, that they want to buy back the reservation and they want total control of the reservation. And this land grab scheme that I'm involved in will allow them to regain thousands of acres of land without any compensation to the purchasers of this property. And this is absolutely an outrage, the fact that they've set so many people up and that they will have a legal ability under federal law to evict people from their property.
Well, now, when you purchased your property, you had no clue as to the fact that you were possibly purchasing what they term a beneficial right as opposed to fee title. Is that correct?
Well, what they've done here is they've separated the title interest into two parts, a beneficial right and a title right. Because this is trust property and not restricted fee property, they have an ability, they say, to split these title interests up. The title interest remains with the United States of America, while a beneficial interest is given to the individual Indian landowner that is selling or that owns a piece of property in this case. And that he actually doesn't own it in whole. He only holds a beneficial interest because it is in trust. And when it is in trust, of course, it's not taxable. It's not lienable for any debts And it was set up this way because so many of the tribal members in the past have lost their properties through no fault of their own. And it's probably true that a lot of white men took advantage of them and, you know, and for whatever reasons got their land. So the federal government recognized this and set laws up in a manner that the Indians wouldn't so easily lose their land. Unfortunately, non-Indian people don't have an advocate. And as a result, a lot of people don't know Indian law and how this land should be conveyed. This conspiracy that I've discovered here involves title companies, it involves our elected local county officials, and it involves the BIA and the tribe here locally. And they've done this intentionally, and I have all the documentation to support and prove these facts. They've fabricated deeds and documents, affidavits, to support the fact, in my case, that land came out of trust status, even though they never made application through the BLM, which is the Bureau of Land Management. I guess I should say a little about the Bureau of Land Management. They're the only organization.
Can I interrupt you for just a second?
Yeah.
I'll bring you back to the Bureau of BLM in just a minute. You know that I'm a real estate broker, and I'm going to ask you to listen kind of closely to the questions I'm asking you, because there's a reason why I'm asking it the way I'm asking it.
Okay.
The question that I was looking for was, what were you told and what did you know just before and at the time you bought the property? In other words, what did you think you were buying, and what were you told specifically before you bought it as to what you were purchasing? What did you believe at that time?
Well, myself and my realtor was told that this was originally Indian Trust land. We were told that they brought it out of trust and it was in fee simple. And that as such, I could own that property. Didn't know anything about beneficial or trust status, how the system worked at all. We had to rely on our professionals, and that was the realtor that represented the Indian that had subdivided the property and my realtor. And so I thought I was buying fee simple property.
And the title company didn't tell you anything different?
No. You know, the title company, unfortunately, through my four-year investigation, the title company did have access to records, and because they're part of this conspiracy, they didn't tell me, no. They had documents in their files that actually showed that this property remained in trust status.
Okay. Now, would you like to tell us about the BLM?
Well, the BLM is the only organization. It differs from the BIA, Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the BLM is entrusted with the responsibility of bringing Indian trust property out of trust and into fee simple. The process is called, at the end of the day, I guess they call it a fee patent, and a fee patent is what I require right now as a non-Indian person to own formally trust property. So the BLM, in all cases where this deed to restricted Indian land device has been used to convey Indian trust property, has been bypassed and omitted from the picture. And unfortunately, the way the federal government's set up, the BLM doesn't have jurisdiction to stop the BIA and vice versa. They're two independent organizations. The BLM has told me in no uncertain terms that they've known about this scheme for years. But because they had no documentation and no authority, they were powerless to stop the scheme. So that's why this scheme has been going on for over two decades. And that's why there's so many thousands of acres that are involved. And to date, I don't know how many individuals are involved in this scheme, but there's an awful lot of them, according to the Lake County Clerk and Recorder's Office. They've been recording these deeds to restricted Indian land for over 20 years. So it's anybody's guess right now how many of these deeds are out there, but they're all bogus, they're all fraudulent, and people are at risk. The tribe at any time can come in, like I said, and legally evict you because they didn't bring it out of trust. The person that sold it didn't own it. And as such, because it remains in trust for the tribe or an individual Indian, they have the right to evict you legally.
So let's recap here. You thought you were buying a fee simple piece of property. You were never told that that this property interest could be divided. You had no knowledge of the fact that what you may have been purchasing was only a beneficial right if the person selling it to you, in fact, even had the right to sell a beneficial right. But none of that was explained to you. And you when you got wind of this, you've been doing the research. Tell us how the BLM has treated you. What kind of relationship have you had at this point with the BLM?
I've had a real good relationship with the BLM. The BIA is a whole entirely different story. The BIA has fabricated deeds. I guess I'm going to have to back up a little bit here. When the county government came down on me and told me that this was a non-conforming subdivision and I had to comply with a whole new set of rules and standards, I immediately said I wouldn't comply until I found out whose jurisdiction this land really rested with. At that point in time, the Lake County government decided to criminally prosecute me and civilly prosecute me. And the criminal prosecution is ongoing to this day because I refused to get one of their permits. I did get a septic tank permit and or a septic system permit. And all of a sudden, the powers...
Are you still there, Liam?
Yeah. Can you hear me okay?
You faded out there for just a minute. I don't know if you were continuing to talk or if you were just resting for a second.
No. Yeah, we're on the road right now. But anyway, I'm being criminally and civilly prosecuted because of this scheme. And
now the county actually started taxing all of these property owners that may or may not have title to their property at this point. And the reason I say may or may not is because they believe they are holding title. They've been acting in a manner for some time, however many years now, that they are in fact in title. They've been paying taxes to the county just like they're in title. So for all practical purposes, from an estoppel position, even though there's a federal statute out there, all of these people that you're talking about, most of them at this point, if not almost all of them, believe they own the title to their property. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And the county was treating them as though the county had jurisdiction over this property, and they've been collecting the taxes on it. And I'm sure that if somebody didn't pay their taxes, they would take it to a tax sale, correct?
That's correct.
So now, you know, you've stayed, I would assume, the situation with the county. Where does that stand at this point?
Well, it's ongoing. The criminal prosecution is ongoing. And so I don't know where it's going to, well, I do know where it's going to end up, because after 4.5 years of research, the BIA finally came forward and admitted that this whole thing is a scam, and they started to decertify and withdraw documents that they used to help convict me civilly and keep the criminal prosecution against myself going. During these criminal and civil prosecutions, they provided bogus, what they call TSRs, title status reports, indicating that the property had come out of trust, and therefore the county did have jurisdiction. That was a lie, and they fabricated all of these documents in doing this. Because of this, you know, I realized then that this was a conspiracy to cover up the fact that the county, like you had said earlier, is illegally taxing these properties. They're illegally taking jurisdiction. The court, in fact, now we know, didn't have jurisdiction to even hear this case, either one of these cases. So,
but they treated you like you were, in fact, an owner. Because it's my understanding that, and just tell me if I'm wrong here, and I'll shut up and let you tell the story, actually, if you want to, but you when you found out that you perhaps had this whole thing had been misrepresented, this was sold on like a seller carry, and since I am a real estate expert, I'll explain what an installment land contract is, because some of our listeners may not know what an installment land contract is. In a normal mortgage situation or a normal deed of trust situation, a person is given title, and then they give a lien to the mortgage holder, and that lien stays on the property until that mortgage is paid off or replaced with another mortgage. But in the case of an installment land contract, usually the seller is carrying the paper, if you will. In other words, the debt is owed to the seller, but title is actually not transferred formally until that debt is paid off, in most cases under an installment land contract. Is that the nature of the way you purchase the property?
That's correct.
Is that the nature of the way that most of the people up there have purchased their property?
I don't believe so. I think there's mortgages on their properties. In my case, I had, like you said, I called a contractor deed because the deed's held in escrow until I satisfy or pay off the loan.
Right. That terminology, contract for deed, is the same thing. A contract for deed is an installment land contract in the state of Colorado. Now, I would assume that it would be similar terms elsewhere.
Yeah. That is
so
correct.
So you at that point, recognizing that this person that had sold you the property may have misrepresented the situation, you suspended your payments to them. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then you ended up in a court situation, and the court treated you just as though, you know, you in fact did have title to the property and owed the money. And you, in fact, paid that debt off 100%. I think that's important for us to make clear to everybody that you have paid in full the purchase price that you agreed to on this property.
Well, that's correct, but you have it a little bit wrong. I was forced to do that because of the fabricated and false affidavits and documents that the tribe and the BIA provided the judicial system. A summary judgment was issued in favor of the seller in this case. And I was never allowed, I was never allowed to get to a jury to hear this case and make my case.
So based on the testimony of this mortgage holder, who is actually the seller of the property, based on that testimony to the court, the court assumed jurisdiction and actually treated you as though you were properly titled. That's what I understand, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
So your ownership interest has been affirmed by the court.
Now it has, yeah, because once I paid it off, he took the, because it's what we call a contract for deed. The deed was in escrow. Once I paid it off, he took a warranty deed that the title company produced as part of this conveyance and recorded that at the courthouse. So, yeah, I have a warranty deed on the property. However, it is still in trust status today. So the warranty deed is useless. The deed remains in trust status to this day. And,
according to federal statute.
According to federal statute. And I think one thing that that we haven't talked about is federal statutes. In this case, because if it was properly conveyed from the beginning, they should have issued me a patent and fee. Federal statute says that anything that attached to the land prior to the final issuance of a patent and fee cannot reattach. So that means all these deeds, all these representations, in others cases, their mortgages and everything, their title insurance, are all bogus. They cannot reattach once a patent fee is issued. So that's why all of these landowners that have a deed to restricted Indian land are at risk, is because of the federal statutes and the fact that it states in the Code of Federal Regulations that anything, once again, anything that attached during the trust period cannot reattach. And even after a patent and fee is issued, the land cannot be taken to satisfy a debt because this was once Indian trust land. So that's why all of our listeners out there that have these deeds to restricted Indian land, and I personally know of quite a few right now, are really at risk.
Well, is there anything that they can do to further protect themselves?
Well, I'm working on that right now. And I'm working, as we spoke a little bit earlier, I'm working with the BLM, and they're treating me very well. Because the BIA has fabricated and lied, and they're the ones that actually are participating in this scheme and this conspiracy, of course, they're trying to figure out how to cover their rear ends. And it's not going very well for them right now, is all I can tell you.
Well, there's obviously a lot of people involved in this from the perspective of the county, of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the seller, the title company. Your attorneys advised you to get this evidence out there so that you're not in a position of risk yourself. And that's, of course, one of the reasons why we've asked you to come on this show, is to help share this information with other people to benefit those that might hear this, but also to benefit yourself a little bit so that this information is public at this point. Is that correct?
That's correct. I think there's another issue.
So what can you share with us about some of the investigative work that you've done, some of the other cases that have turned up? Now, we know that there's some other possible RICO cases out there that are ongoing and are being pursued. How deep does this thing go? How broad is it?
Oh, it's very broad. The FBI has been working with me for over 3 years, and I'm quite confident that there'll be indictments coming down any time. We're getting real close to the end of this thing with our investigation and the necessary documents. And, right now I'm not officially on a witness protection list, but I've been notified of my rights under the federal protection, and my life has been threatened, and that of some of my family members. So again, you were correct in saying this is why we're trying to get this out here, so the more people have this information. And if something were to happen to me, you know, I've already made sure that the information that I've collected over the last 4 years is in a lot of different hands at this point in time. And so I can tell the listeners right now that, you know, that this goes very deep. It goes all the way to Washington, D.C. It goes to Portland, Oregon. It involves our local elected officials here in Lake County. It involves the CSKT tribe, all the land title records offices. And I can also tell the listeners that this is a very bizarre case, because we actually have convicted felons that have been put in positions of authority to help perpetuate this conspiracy. Haven't researched the fact yet if a convicted felon can work for the federal government in a position of authority, but such is the case in this situation right now. So there's an awful lot going. The roots are very deep and broad.
Well, Liam, you're familiar with the name of Red Beckman. Red's, you know, lived in Montana most of his life, and has been and is a property owner in Montana, and knows a lot of people there. Once ran for governor of the state of Montana. Red, you want to say hello to Liam?
Well, I'm here, and I'm sure glad to hear from a fellow Montanan. And I want to welcome you to the show, because anything that's going on in Montana, I perk up my ears. And of course, I have some ideas about these Indian reservations and the problems that we've got with them in so many places. And it's... these problems aren't going to go away. They are not going to go away. And there's not very many of the purebred Indians left, and because they have been intermarrying with everybody else. And we've got people that are calling themselves Indians. Well, we used to call them blue-eyed Indians over in eastern Montana. And if there was a problem with the Indians in the reservation, it was usually caused by people that might only have a 1/16 of Indian blood in their veins, but they were members of the particular tribe that they claimed. And this is not going to get any better, because you're going to have a lot of these who claim to be 1/16 tribal members. Their offspring are going to go outside of the reservation for life mates and that type of thing. And so it's going to get a lot more sticky than it is today. And so, you know, I think that has to be taken into consideration at this point in time. At some point, there's not going to be any reservations. They're going to have to be assimilated into the regular system in the country. This just isn't going to work forever. And so I think that's something that they would like to ignore, but I don't think they dare to ignore this problem. So I'm glad you're here on the program, and I'm wishing you the best. I don't hear the best, so I may be missing some of what you're saying, but I it sounds to me from people I've talked to in Montana that what you have is fraud piled up on top of fraud. And from all I've heard, the word conspiracy is a word that fits in there very, very well and very accurately. So just keep up the fight because you should win it eventually. So thank you for coming on the program.
Well, thank you for your comments and your thoughts. I wish this wasn't happening. I'm a disabled veteran, and my life's going to be cut short the way it is. And I certainly didn't need to go through this in my last years, and it makes it that more difficult for me. But once I found out that thousands of acres and numerous landowners, friends, and fellow citizens' land is at risk, I realize that I have a different calling than that's not really just personal. My calling in this fight is for more than myself. It's not for selfish reasons that I'm on this program. I'm confident that I am going to be taken care of, but it's the other people out there that aren't even aware of the fact that they've been wrong. And, you know, subsequently, I'm sure there'll be a class action lawsuit by these individuals. But right now, it's kind of up to me to break trail and get the information in the hands of the right people and expose this whole plot. And in order to protect the people that are here, this thing goes so deep, and they've got people planted in so many different positions that it's really hard for me to understand at times. But this is really designed to take down our local county government. There are going to be so many people that can be, and I don't know if this will happen or not, but potentially. They could take a lot of thousands of acres back. Those lands would be taken off the tax rolls. We already know that the per dam's going to be taken over, and we'll lose the tax revenue from that. If all of these people lose their land, of course, they'll leave the county because they can't fight the federal government. It's just too costly and expensive individually. And so realistically, this is an attempt to take down our county government. And, you know, and it'll leave the Indians with an opportune position to take advantage of because, like I said earlier, they won't have to compensate any of these victims that they've set up. Federal law didn't foresee these people doing this. And as a result, they'll have the legal ability to evict people if they so desire. And I truly believe the only way we're going to stop it is to get it out in the public and create such an uproar and show how it connects in with the water compact and that it's all part of a bigger conspiracy to take down our government. I shouldn't say, you know, like federal government, but to take down our local government, which allows them, in the end of the day, to regain total control and ownership of this reservation. This is a hard concept for people to understand, but it is absolutely true. And it's just not something I've come up with. I do have all the documents to support what I'm telling you.
Well, there's obviously, you know, some unjust enrichment going on.
Oh, absolutely.
And particularly most, if not all, of these property transfers have come with an owner's title insurance policy. So how is the title company avoiding their liability and responsibility to compensate fully the owners, or the ones that believe that they are owners, that these title policies were issued to? How are they avoiding even – they should even be paying for the defense of these people's title.
Well, you know, like I said, there's many people that don't even know this is occurring right now. It's unbelievable. But the county or the title companies, and I have verification and proof of this as well, have lied to their underwriters. They didn't do proper due diligence investigations. Like I said earlier in the show, I have documents that were in their files that support the fact that none of this property came out of trust. Title companies knew it. They lied to their underwriters. And this is, again, part of the bigger conspiracy. Not only are the tribal people doing it, but non-tribal people are enriching themselves and taking advantage of the fact that the tribe, that they know that the tribe wants this reservation back, and that they're going to do anything they can. So they just jumped on the wagon and thought that they'd just enrich themselves, like you just said. So this, again, is how deep this actually goes. I'm not quite sure about the mortgage companies, because the title companies, of course, if they lie to their underwriters, the mortgage companies are satisfied they did their due diligence. But I'm not sure if the mortgages will be forgiven. I'm not sure if the mortgage companies will suffer the same consequences as the people, because if the seller didn't own the title, certainly the first that the mortgage company is carrying, United States government owns it, not the individual Indian. And how that's going to play out in the mortgage situation, I don't know. And that's something that we're going to have to investigate and let the lawyers figure out. But this is just outrageous. The county attorney's office here, they've known about this. They've had counsel with the Department of Interior, the solicitor's office in D.C. 4 years ago that this land was, in fact, in trust. And they ignored the counsel and advice of learned attorneys that are in specialties, or specialty attorneys for Indian Affairs. And they refused to do an investigation and just kept on business as usual. They continued to record and tax these properties, knowing that they were not out of trust. So, you know, who's going to be liable in this case? Well, maybe individually they are. But hopefully the insurance companies will pay off some of these damages. We don't know. We just don't know how this is all going to shake out. But I do have enough information to drag all of these individuals in as well. And it's massive. It's just unbelievable that this can occur in the United States of America.
What's to stop a quiet title suit?
Well, the federal government regulations, for one, because the Indians are treated as a sovereign nation. And, you know, the Code of Federal Regulations is a different statutory set of rules, regulations, than Montana State has. And, again, because the Indians were taken advantage of years ago, things were set up to protect these people. And, you know, so it's going to end up in federal court, for one thing. And I don't know that much about a quiet title action, but I do know that the Code of Federal Regulations is going to take over. I know that certain individuals can't be sued because of their so-called sovereign status, but other government agencies can be sued. And so how this is going to shake out, Terry, I don't know.
Well, as I told you in one of our previous conversations, I was aware because of a patented property that we acquired, and a group that I was working with invested in a property that had previously been state-owned. And there was a roadway that had been used for many, many years, even as a bus route, that crossed this property, right through the property. And there was never even an easement filed for that. And what we learned was that you cannot obtain any ownership or use of state-owned property by way of adverse possession. Therefore, we actually had the right when we acquired the property to go and barricade that bus route, and we could have closed that road had we desired to do so. Of course, we were looking for entitlements from the county and the local city, and we're looking to do rezoning and that sort of thing. So we were being nice to them so long as they were being nice to us. But it was quite an education, even though I'd been involved in real estate at that point for a good close to 30 years, nearly 40 years now. It was an eye opener to realize that some of the laws that apply to an individual ownership does not apply to any kind of state or municipal ownership. And I would suspect, and again, talking from a voice of experience, I would suspect that a quiet title suit might not even be contested. And it may not change things. It may not have a long-term effect. On the other hand, I would suspect that it would at least strengthen people's positions in what ownership interest they do have. And it would make it more difficult, perhaps, for someone to come in and contest that ownership, even under a federal statute, after a quiet title suit had succeeded. It would also force them, if they are noticed on the quiet title suit, if they become aware of the quiet title suit, it would force them to expose themselves in their knowledge of this deception. So it is something that I would suggest looking into and talking to your attorney about.
Well, I'll take that under advisement, of course. And my research has basically been on federal rather than state law, and the fact that, we have different types of Indian land under different circumstances. And again, because we have Indian treaties and stuff that the federal government entered into, and they realized that the Indians were being abused and losing their lands, they attempted to protect them. So all of this is going to interfere with any common sense approach, I believe. I don't know how this will shake out at the end of the day, because it is the federal government, and we're dealing with an entity that's holding some property in a trust status so that the individual Indian landowner can't lose it, even through inadvertent mistakes. I don't know if that covers fraud, on the basis that I have here, but again, at the end of the day, they're trying to make sure that individual Indian doesn't lose his land to no fault of his own. We've got huge entities involved here that are conspiring for a different reason, as I've tried to explain, and statutes give them more authority than a non-Indian person would have in this situation. And so, the attorneys are going to have to do their homework and come up with reasons and solutions and strategies you know, like a quiet title action to get beyond this. But right now I'm being counseled by the Department of Interior in Washington, D.C., that I'm a trespasser on my own land. And she was the one that gave me the advice to cease payments on this property because it's good money after bad. And that I don't have an ownership interest and never will have under these circumstances, especially under the deed, this deed to restricted Indian land that they're using to convey this property. So we've got a lot of legalism to overcome in this situation. And it's not going to be hard to find the perpetrators, that's for sure. I've certainly got a list of them in the right hands. But people out there have to check their deeds if they live in Lake County or Sanders County. And they have to check the status of their property because at one time all of the land up here was Indian Trust land. We do realize that some of it was homesteaded, and that was excess land that they had here, and that was legally auctioned off, or it wasn't auctioned off, but it was a lottery drawing. And the Indians balked at that years later, but they were compensated for that. So, you know, I can understand them having hard feelings over the federal government coming in and selling part of the reservation after they said, you know, define the boundaries of the reservation, but nonetheless, they were compensated. But this is a difficult situation and a difficult time for all people in Lake County right now because of the water compact and the effect it's going to have on our economy and on our local governments. And then we have this land grab that's acting in concert with the water compact, which is very easy to see will allow the Indians total ownership and control. And they will force the white man off the reservation if they're allowed to win either one of these battles.
Well, I have not heard you say that you had any desire to move or to sell your property, but I'm sure that there are other people in the area who in fact, or possibly even have the property on the market for sale right now. What's going to happen to those people when they want to sell that property?
Well, if you know, if they realize that there's not going to be that many, I don't know how to put this. If a lot of people are losing their land, you know, the market value is going to go down. And that's what the tribal people are hoping for. As fast as they regain this property, even if they can regain it through eviction, we all realize they'll immediately put it back in trust. And when they do that, then they'll lose future tax revenues off of our local government. We'll lose future tax revenues off of these thousands of acres that have been wrongfully conveyed as well. Not only will the local governments be responsible for wrongfully taxing these properties, but they'll also be losing future revenues when the Indians regain ownership or reestablish ownership and take them off the tax rolls. So you can only imagine what's going to happen to land values. I mean, who in their right mind would come up here and buy land, even if we do have the most beautiful lake in the world? We don't know how this is going to affect people that have homes on the lake, because obviously all those homes were one time in trust, and they're as much at risk as the farmers and ranchers out here in the flatlands. So, and I imagine a few of those are lawyers. So, you know, it seems to be the wealthy people that enjoy this lake. So I'm going to have a lot of company before this is over, I'm sure.
Well, this has cost you a lot of money, but more than anything else, it's cost you a lot of stress. And so you have been damaged in more way than one here. And I'm going to be praying that whatever action you take, whether it's civil, criminal, or a combination of both, that it will not put any more strain on you than necessary. And I really pray that you have some success. I know that there is a racketeering suit out there that's going on, and some pretty sinister things have been uncovered. How long are they going to keep a lid on this?
I don't know. We're scheduled to go in front of the legislature when the water compact comes up. I've been asked to testify and make this public. We're going to attempt to get it on the local TV stations. And while trying to protect myself and my family. But like you said, this is, my disability is for, I have an ischemic heart disease as a result of exposure to Agent Orange. And so it doesn't take much stress to create a lot of heart problems for me. So I don't know how much longer I'll be able to continue to fight, but I'm hoping it just to put it in my lawyer's hands and let him run with it. And that's the way it's going right now. I've got all the information in his hands, and we're just trying to get this out to the public, let people understand. I've suggested that people call the FBI in Kalispell, and that they call the BLM in Billings and get on a list. Because the BLM right now is telling people that it is in fact true. They do not have an ownership title to their property, and because the BI did it, they don't know how they're going to resolve these issues yet. And like I said, the solicitor's office in Washington, D.C., as we speak, is attempting to come up with solutions, but these solutions keep perpetuating the fraud rather than uncovering it and doing what's right in this matter. So it's going to be, it's going to be very interesting to see how this shakes out, especially at the local level with our local county governments. They have a specific role in this, and they knowingly have accepted these and instructed their clerk and recorders to ignore the face value of the documents, the conveyance documents, and go ahead and record them just so they can put them on the tax roll. So, somebody on maybe it was a TV show said, follow the money. I'm sure we'll find out who is enriching themselves as a result of this, which elected officials are getting a kickback and all of that kind of stuff. But it's going to have a dramatic impact on services and our county government up here, and it's going to have a dramatic impact on the judiciary because they've attempted to cover this up. They've known about this, and the judge that was involved in my case has actually had counsel from the attorneys back in D.C. that this property remained in trust in. But nonetheless, she ignored that advice and counsel and went ahead and issued a summary judgment in favor of the tribe and the individual in an effort to shelter, I'm sure, the county from having to pay back all of these taxes. So actually, I'm more worried about our local county government and the sheriff's department up here than I am the tribe. Tribal people, by the way, are going to be affected by this because some of the lots that were sold using these same deeds didn't convey the property to the individual Indian owners as well. And I neglected to say that earlier in the show. But this is not a discriminatory thing. Both Indian and non-Indian landowners are going to be affected by this fraudulent conveyance. I know the tribal members right now are very upset because of the fact that they didn't get their full payment, and they have very little confidence in their elected tribal council, much as a lot of people don't have confidence in our local government here in Lake County. And so it always seems to be the government that is creating a problem for the people. And this seems to be worldwide now. And again, you know, I see this as a calling, and that I'm being given the necessary power to keep going in the midst of my heart disease. And you know, we're hopefully using your show with God's permission, and we hope that, you know, people will hear this show, and you know, word of mouth is a lot better sometimes than TV recognition and stuff like that. And, you know, I just want to thank you guys for helping me in my battle here, and thank you for your prayers as well. You know, I need them. And the people that are victims need our prayers.
Well, I want to let our those that have called in, we do have some folks that are online, but I haven't seen any hands raised. If anyone has a question at this point or even a comment, please hit a 1 when you call in on our call-in line, and that will raise your hand so that we'll know to give you an open mic and let you ask your question. Red, I'm curious. I know that I believe you've probably been involved in some quiet title suits in Montana. And at this point, you probably got some ideas that you might want to share with Liam. Would you like to chime in?
Well, I've had some quiet titles, but they've been mostly because of Internal Revenue Service, messing with land titles and that type of thing. But quiet title actions, you have to be very, very careful because there's lawyers. You end up with lawyers. And I had one time, and they never noticed me of this hearing. And I was, you know, part of the action, and I should have been noticed so that I could be there or have the hearing delayed until I could be there. You know, when I challenged them on it, they said, we let you know. And I said, no, you didn't. And you haven't got any certified letter or mail or anything proving that I got it because it isn't there. And so you end up with another battle. And of course, you have to be careful. You see, if the government is involved at any level, city, county, state, federal, you will have a judge. And like I say, if it's any level of government involved, every judge will be an employee of government. And they will be beneficiaries of tax laws and all of that. And so you have to be real careful so that a judge, if it is a government entity that is involved, you have to put that judge on notice. That by way of judicial notice, that he has a conflict of interest and that he cannot make findings of fact or conclusions of law because he is actually a party to the action. And I'll tell you, I've never run into anything that will shut down a judge any quicker than challenging them on that basis. And so in your situation there with all of this, I'm sure that any quiet title action is going to end up in a court of law. And I'm sure that the tribal government or the county government, the state government, the federal government, they're going to come into the picture someplace. And so it's vital that the judge, you see, he is in a position. If he isn't challenged on this, he can be very easily bribed. You know, if there's a bunch of lawyers and opportunists involved, they are not above bribing a judge to get what they get something a ruling in their favor. And so a quiet title action ordinarily is not a jury. A jury doesn't make the decision. However, I think that if a person were to end up in a situation where you have a problem with a judge who is actually a party to the action because of his employment, his employer, then I think that a person would be, you know, I think that filing a quiet title action demanding a Seventh Amendment jury trial would probably, it would cause a lot of people to step back and take a look, because where you put the judge on notice that he can't make findings of fact or conclusions of law, there has to be somebody that is going to make those findings of fact and conclusions of law. And, of course, the seventh article of the Bill of Rights says that if the controversy is over, has a value of over $20, you have the right to a trial by jury. And of course, like I say, quiet title actions have not been, the people don't have access to a jury trial. And I think that's a mistake. I think it's a constitutional issue that probably needs to be addressed here in the future at some time. I'm surprised that it hasn't already. Of course, it may have been tried, but you may not have a record of it. So I don't know. This sounds like something, this whole scenario, like I said earlier, it's fraud on top of fraud. And to be able to unravel such a difficult situation, I think that you're going to find that you're going to be at the mercy of a government employee in a black dress that will have more power than they really should, and they're in a position where they can be bribed, they can be, subverted in one way or another. And so it's a serious problem. And I, from here, for me to try to settle, you know, come up with an answer is very difficult. All I can do is suggest, examining some of this and taking a look at it and see if there's anything, any value in what I've said. But I am a firm believer in the 7th article of the Bill of Rights and that common law jury. I think they are far more capable and proper an action that will give you the right answers. You'll have a better chance, I think. We have to remember that the 7th Amendment common law jury is made up of sovereign citizens, sovereign Americans, and that the 7th Amendment common law jury is the highest court in our land. And, that most people, that's the first time they've heard it, probably, what I just said. But if they'll read that, it tells you that the findings when the common law jury finds of facts, when they rule on the facts of a case, the amendment says that no court in the land can reexamine that case, and that tells you that the 7th Amendment common law jury is the highest court in our land, and it should be, because the 9 justices of the Supreme Court are government agents. All of the judges at the appellate court level are all government agents. All of the judges at the state level, including your state Supreme Court, all of them are government agents. They're all government paid. Their wages are paid. Their pension plans, their health plans, and all the rest. And we have to point the finger at these people and tell them this so that they know we know that this is the situation. They are government employees, and if they're government employees, they're a government agent, just like the guy that sweeps the floor in the federal building or the county courthouse or any place else. If he's tax supported, if his wages, his salary comes from tax money, then he is an agent of government. And you see, we've had lawyers that buddy up with a judge, and they can get things favorable rulings out of a judge. And this is why it's very difficult for a young lawyer just out of law school to win a case, because they haven't had time to become personally acquainted and get the judge in a position where he feels obligated to help his friend. And so this is something that you have to keep in mind. I'm not saying that there's a solution here for your problem there in Montana at the present time, but I think this is all, ideas that need to be considered and remembered. So with that, it's back to you, Terry.
Liam, do you have any specific question of Red?
Well, I think that was good advice, but I don't know how a person can employ a common law jury when they don't recognize it in the local courts. I've already experienced one judge that completely ignored the law, and because of the relationships with the former county attorney who was representing the plaintiff in this case, the guy that sold me the land, he had plenty of opportunities to buddy up with the judge, and that's why the ruling part, reason is why the ruling came down the way it did. In as much as she issued a summary judgment in their favor, and despite what the law had to say. So I don't know how to find a lawyer that in this world that would even know what Red just talked about. And most of them, work on the relationships that Red described, and And, you know, I realized from the get-go that this is going to be an uphill battle because, like I said earlier in the show, the federal government has a responsibility as the trustee or trustor and to be the Indians' advocate. And since they hold the title to the land, they have a fiduciary responsibility to the Indians to defend them in any manner that they have to, right or wrong. So, you know, it's not that I expect any justice in any of these courts. And I think Red's advice has merit.
Let me inject something here, please. What I think you just about have to go into federal court, and if you're going to use the 7th article of the Bill of Rights, and I think, you know, that is by far the best way to resolve a controversy such as you're involved in. But I think you just about have to go to federal court. And in the 7th Amendment, this is Rule 38. You may want to write that down. Rule 38 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. Write that down because you can use that and in conjunction with the 7th article of the Bill of Rights and demanding a jury trial, because the judge, you can't find a neutral judge. You can't find one. There is no such thing.
Right.
You see, you have to argue the case yourself. You cannot use a lawyer to represent you. If you have a lawyer representing you, you are immediately shifted. They shift gears on you, and they put you into an equity or an admiralty jurisdiction, and then the judge has all the power. So you have to argue the case yourself in front of the jury, but that isn't anything bad. That is, you know, good for the simple reason that you will know, understand all of the, you know, the facts of the case. You will know them better than any lawyer would ever learn them. And so, you get the lawyers out of the way, and you can discuss things with that jury. That common law jury, they can ask you questions. They can ask you questions. They can ask you know, either side. They can ask them questions. They don't have to sit there and hope that either the plaintiff or the defendants will ask the right questions. They can ask the questions of either party. And this is how common law courts work. They're not under the rules that are, you know, manufactured, you might say, by a bunch of lawyers. And along with the workings of the federal judges and or any judge, any place, in any court.
Where have you seen this work?
I didn't get you.
He said, where have you seen this work? Where have you seen this work?
I'll tell you, it's very rare, and I haven't really... I had a quiet title action filed in federal court in Billings, Montana. And I had to have an attorney to file it because I was scheduled for so many speaking engagements around the country, tours, where I was speaking in many locations and such. I had to have a lawyer to monitor it. And the IRS was involved in it, of course, and but I had given the lawyer the information. He said, "Red, you can't win, you can't win, you can't win." And I said, "You'll get your money. You tell me how much you want for a retainer, and I'll give you the money." And this lawyer had done work for me in other situations and always got his money. And we considered ourselves to be pretty good friends. And he was trying to be helpful when he said that I couldn't win. Well, I had filed a common law action in 1993 where I sued federal judge Batten. Now, he was the senior federal judge in Montana. He has now gone on to see the great judge of the universe. I had sued him using the 7th article of the Bill of Rights, and the case went up through the system, and by August of 96, case was docketed with the U.S. Supreme Court. In December of 96, just from August to December, the Solicitor General, who defends the government in all federal cases where the federal government is a party, he noticed all the parties to the action that he was not going to oppose me, that I was correct in what I was saying. No one is going to argue with you when you bring out the fact that a judge is a government employee. He is a beneficiary of the tax laws, and if he is a party to the action, or if the government is a party to the action, the judge is a party to the action. And
right.
Therefore, what?
Oh, I just said right.
Yeah, anyway, when that happened, when that case was docketed with the U.S. Supreme Court, the District Counsel for the Internal Revenue Service immediately went into situation. He notified the lawyer who I had. I was out of town. He notified the lawyer that they had to settle that case. And the lawyer, it took the lawyer by surprise. And the lawyer said, "Well, what's going on?" And the district counsel for the IRS told the lawyer, he said, "We are going to have a very bad precedent." And so the case was settled. I got $145,000 out of it. It was my money, of course, but, you know, I got that money out of them, and there's not too many people that get money out of, you know, the Internal Revenue Service or the federal government. You see, that attorney, or IRS attorney, realized the power of a Seventh Amendment common law case. He knew that I was correct when I sued Judge Batten. I had 4 different complaints that I had filed in the federal court system in Montana. I had filed 4 different complaints demanding a jury trial in each and every case. And Judge Batten had just summarily dismissed all 4 cases on motion by the U.S. Justice Department. Now, that Judge Batten had violated Title 18, the U.S. Criminal Code, Sections 241 and 242. And that's just two sites there where they had violated the law, the criminal law. They also violated the obstruction of justice and Well, there was several cases that I had brought to the attention in the lawsuit. And the thing that is aggravating about it is that the case is still docketed with the U.S. Supreme Court this many years later, and they have not heard it. They never will. I'm convinced of that for the simple reason that they are very uncomfortable with anybody that recognizes that they are government agents and that they are not the highest court in the land. They're the highest court in the land for corporate law and for laws, conflicts between the states. But for situations where the individual who is not a corporate entity, that's a different ball game. And so that's what the 7th article of the Bill of Rights is there for. And right, so I better, right. I'll quit right there.
Well, let me interject a little bit, Liam, then I'll let you jump in. Liam obviously, has a, heart condition. And so I don't know if you would be comfortable, Liam, going in and acting as yourself, because that's one of the requirements under this common law or Seventh Amendment approach. You can't even represent yourself. You've actually got to go in pro persona as yourself. You can have counsel who will consult with you but not represent you in order to set the common law court. So it might be, and, this is a for your own judgment, really, and maybe your doctor's judgment, it might be that somebody else, because you're not alone in this. I mean, you've got 1,000 other people out there who may be in exactly the same situation you're in, and maybe even one of your friends that, that I'm aware of that might have the ability to approach this in that way. You want to make a comment before I ask you another question? Because I'd like to get back into this Indian trust situation and the chain of title a little bit, but I want to afford you the opportunity to comment or ask a question here.
No, go ahead.
Well, a couple of names in a little bit of research that I've done turned up and I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. There's an Albert. Is it Dupuy or Dupuis? What? How do you pronounce
Dupuy.
That?
Dupuy.
Dupuy?
Yeah, Dupuy.
And driving up over Togarty Pass there up in Wyoming, I come across Du Bois, and I didn't know whether to pronounce it Dubois or Du Bois. And I got an education up there, so... I wanted to know, can you tell us a little about this Albert Dupuy, or however you pronounce it, and Mr. Greg Marengo, and how did that all shake out as far as the chain of title, and what would have been required versus what you turned up? I mean, did Marengo even have any kind of title, even to a beneficial interest, given the chain of title you've seen?
Well, I haven't seen the chain of title yet. That's one document that they're holding hostage right now. I do know I have every other document I need, and I'd like to see that, but it's not really, at this point in time, that relevant, because the other documents already support the issue that we're talking about here. But Albert Dupuy was the original lottee who was issued a trust patent from the United States of America. And he's deceased. And when he died, his sister inherited property. And
that's Anna Lee Cohen?
That's Anna Lee Cohen. And she has one son that's in and out of prison, so I don't know if you could suggest that he's competent or not. I know that there's a person that oversees the estate of Anna Lee Cohen for her son. And so we'll just leave that at that. And purportedly, Greg Marengo bought the property from Anna Lee Cohen. But previous discovery in the civil case whereby the local judge issued the summary judgment, we asked for all pertinent documents from the tribe. We asked for a chain of title. We asked for proof that Greg Marengo actually owned the land. And we've never been, no documents have ever been produced by the tribe or Greg Marengo to actually show that he owns this land. The deed of restricted Indian land has a clause in it that this deed is made in accordance with U.S. Title 25, and then goes on to name a particular statute. And that has to do with partitioning. And typically, in Indian law, when a conveyance is made using partitioning, you'll see that it involves an estate and an heir. Let's just say somebody died without a will or any documents, and they had three sons. Well, the BIA could step in and partition that land for the benefits of the heirs. In this case here, Greg Marengo was not an heir of Anna Lee Cohen. So this is one of the frauds that's being perpetuated within the face of this deed to restricted Indian land, is the fact that they said that this is being made in concurrence with the partitioning laws of the federal government. Moreover, the very title of this document, Deed to Restricted Indian Land, well, this is trust land. It's not restricted. Trust land is when the federal government holds the title in trust for the individual Indian, and the individual Indian therein has a beneficial interest. Restricted land is where an individual Indian holds the title, but is subject to alienation and other restrictions. And for them to call this restricted land when it's an undisputed fact that this is trust land is another anomaly. It's just unbelievable how these people have set this scheme up. And the things that they've done on the face of the document, I mean, and the title of the document itself, purports that it's not trust property, but it's restricted. So you get into an entirely different set of rules when you're dealing with restricted land rather than trust land. And so you can see how this, like Red was saying, you know, we've got fraud upon fraud in this thing, and these are some of the things that I'm uncovering. And
when did this subdivision first begin? How long ago did they first subdivide or supposedly subdivide?
Yeah, that's another issue, is that the fellow that I'm dealing with in Washington, D.C. right now is the head of the Land Title Records Office, and he's testified that you cannot create a subdivision or even partition land unless you own the whole title to the property. So if this started off as trust property and you didn't take it out of trust, put it into fee simple, you didn't start off owning the property. And Montana law says that you cannot have a partial ownership and subdivide or convey property with a partial interest. And so we've got an individual here that has a partial interest that went ahead with a subdivision before the conveyance deeds were produced. So that's another fraud upon all of these people, is that they were producing deeds after they subdivided or partitioned these lands. And so they kind of have the cart before the horse in this. That's another violation of the Code of Federal Regulations in my particular case. And individuals will have to study their situation and find out how their lands were conveyed and you know, there is a specific order in which title law takes over, and in subdivisions you have to own the property before you can subdivide it or even make application for a subdivision. Another thing in this situation is if Greg Marengo had owned the land in fee simple, then the tribe would have lost jurisdiction to do a subdivision review, because then it would have been in fee simple, and instantly it becomes under the jurisdiction of the state of Montana. And then they have the jurisdiction and the legal ability to do the subdivision, and not the tribe. So herein is another area of fraud that I've uncovered.
So was there an application for subdivision in the county?
No. No, there was not.
Then how did the county ever even get into the picture?
Well, they took jurisdiction after I bought it. The very fact that I'm a non-Indian and I purchased property within the subdivision is what triggered the whole thing. And when they recorded that deed to restricted Indian land, they just naturally assumed and were told by the county attorneys that they could record these deeds and they could put them on the tax rolls. And any non-Indian that purchases a piece of this property is subject to their jurisdiction and their control.
Were you the first to buy land in the subdivision?
No, I was not. But I was the first one to be attacked by the county government because I refused to buy into their permit system. And like I said earlier, I bought one permit, and they wanted another one. And subsequently, they told me that I was violating their setback rules, and I had built a building too close to the property line, and therein I needed to purchase a variance permit for $500 to determine if I had to demolish the building or move it, and or, you know, if they were going to allow a variance. And I, you know, at that point in time, I said, I've had enough of this. I don't believe you have jurisdiction over this. I have every reason in the world to believe that this is still in trust, because I'd done a little bit of preliminary. Well, I found a letter from the BIA superintendent that was authored during the subdivision review process that instructed Greg Marengo and required of Greg Marengo that he obtain patents and fees for any lots that he brought out of or that he desired to sell to non-Indian. So there was a specific written requirement for each lot that he sold to a non-Indian that he obtain a patent fee from the BLM. Herein, he decided to ignore this provision from the BIA superintendent. After the fact, he was allowed to continue to do what he did, and he took deeds that were issued prematurely without title to the property and recorded them at the local courthouse. And this was all fraud. It's all fraudulent. And then the county just assumed that they had jurisdiction. So this thing is very complicated. And
so the subdivision was then approved by the tribe?
The subdivision review was done by the tribe. They hired subcontractors throughout the state of Montana to do an environmental assessment, and whenever they could do Fonzie's findings of, Fonzie is a finding of no significant impact. That was required. Surveys were done by a combination of surveyors, and Lake County therein approved the subdivision as agents for the DEQ and on behalf of Lake County, knowing that the tribe had done the subdivision review.
And I assume that the tribe is not subject to a FOIA request.
Oh, yes, they are. I've had a FOIA request in for 4 years. And that's what took me 4.5 years to get a response to that, and that response was from the director of the BIA himself, Michael Black. Therein, this response, Michael Black affirmed that the property remains in trust and that a patent and fee needs to be immediately issued to complete the chain of title in this action. So he vindicated me after they forced me into bankruptcy, after they forced me to buy land that I would never be able to own, and during the time when I'm being criminally processed or criminally prosecuted. So
by the county who doesn't have jurisdiction.
By the county who doesn't have jurisdiction, yeah.
But who continues to collect taxes.
Yes, well done.
Marengo, was he the person who filed the subdivision?
He's the one that requested the review because he is a tribal member and he's acted as the tribal surveyor. He is a surveyor by trade. He's a licensed state surveyor. So it's not
so
that he's illiterate in subdivisions. He, you know, he's a trained professional in subdividing land, so he knows exactly what he's doing here.
Has he been the one on all of the sales for that subdivision, or have there been others?
In my subdivision, he's the only one, but there are others. And here's an example of how the water compact ties into all of this. We've got a person, on his name escapes me right now, that has been designated as the new CEO for Kerr Dam. He's a former realtor from the St. Ignatius area. And he is now being named as, the CEO for Kerr Dam when they take it over in 2015. And he's involved in this. He is conveyed land using the same scheme. So you can see that the tribe is putting individuals in key positions of authority reach their goal of total ownership and total control over the reservation. This guy was, you know, in my opinion, he's being rewarded for conveying property in this manner so that they can take it back, take it off the tax rolls, regain the property, and now he'll be in charge of Kerr Dam, so he'll be the guy that'll be raising the power rates and putting more pressure on non-Indian people to remain in this valley. So, you know, this is why the FBI is involved. This is why my life's at risk. And, you know, because I've uncovered all of this. Through the help of people, you know, I haven't done it myself, and I shouldn't try and take all the credit for this because I've had an awful lot of help. And there's an awful lot of people that are sharing this information that I'm giving out tonight. But you can see once again how large this really is and how well planned this has been. And like I said earlier, they have convicted felons in key positions of authority that are acting to create and certify deeds. You know, these are people that they can control and they can reward by elevating them to lucrative positions within the tribe. And county government's no different. You know, there's a reason they're doing this. They're knowingly doing this. And there's a reason that they've forced me into bankruptcy and ruled against me because they have a lot to lose. And they know it. And one of the things they're going to lose are their possessions. And, you know, the FBI isn't too far away.
You've talked about them installing people into key positions. The highest law enforcement officer in a county, of course, is the sheriff. Do you want to discuss that?
Sure. Well, yeah, Jay Doyle. You know, he's currently on the rolls. And most people don't realize it, that the Salish Kootenai tribe has a constitution. And to be on the rolls, you have to swear an allegiance to the Constitution of the Salish and Kootenai tribe. So we have an elected official, elected sheriff, that definitely has a conflict of interest. And when this whole thing comes down and tribal members are being hauled off, who do you suppose will come to their rescue? I'm not going to try and convict the man or say what he's going to do or what he's not going to do, but I know if I put this out that he's far less apt to do what they're counting on him to do. It was very important that he be elected to this position because of the scam that they have created and are orchestrating as we speak. So, again, you know, this is why I have reason to fear the judiciary as well as the police authority in this county. You know, he already has one lawsuit against him right now. That's a RICO action and everything else, and now he's going to have another one probably. So it's a dangerous place to be here right now.
Indeed. What else, what other piece of evidence do you need for the general public to be aware of up there so that it's not held close to you that you haven't shared with us already tonight?
I've got a lot of evidence that I won't share with you tonight. And it's because I'm, you know, I have a calling to break trail in this situation. I'm confident that I have a good attorney that knows what's going on up here because he's handling the RICO case for the individual that you spoke about earlier. So I didn't have to convince him of the corruption in Lake County. And, you know, there's certain things that I don't want to put out, pieces of evidence, and where they can obtain it. Because the other people are going, you know, they're all individuals, and I don't know the individual circumstances of how they obtain their land. But I do know that if they have a deed to restricted Indian land, that they're at risk. And the BLM will affirm this. And I think that you and I have common friends that have affirmed this to you, that they've already called these agencies, and BLM has, in fact, affirmed that their land is at risk, that they do not have an ownership interest in their property.
If someone wants to get more information on this, do you have any suggestions as to where they might go to get information? Obviously, not wanting to disclose your personal information, but is there anybody out there or any source available at this point where they can get answers?
Well, I don't think they're going to get any answers from anybody, but I think the best person to contact is Susan Phillips with the FBI in Kalispell. She will be starting a list, or she has started a list already, on the victims. And,
will it,
you know,
do them any good to contact their title company, if nothing else?
Because they're going to lie about it. I mean, they're involved. I mean, they've already lied to their underwriters. The title companies, I've had a couple individuals call their title companies, and they blatantly lied and badmouthed myself because they know all about me, of course. And they're desperate for me to go away so that they're not uncovered and exposed.
How many title companies are involved in this that you are aware of?
Every title company in Lake County. You know, there's and a lot of realtors here. And realtors are running scared right now here in Lake County. And they don't know that much in Sanders County, but they're going to find out pretty quick. I can't say if the title companies up there are involved, but they're probably a branch of the title companies that are here in Polson. And so, you know, we'll have to investigate that. I'm not the only one investigating this. Like I said, the FBI is involved, and they're doing their own investigation. And they, as well as my attorney, want this out in the public. So best person to contact with any concerns would be Susan Phillips with the FBI in Kalispell, Montana. She's the political.
That's Stephen. That's Stephen. Just to be clear, because you're a little gravelly right now. You're saying Stephen Phillips in Kalispell.
Susan, it's a lady.
Susan Phillips.
That's correct.
At the FBI office in Kalispell.
That's correct.
We've got about 9 minutes to go, gentlemen. Red, do you have any more questions? I guess we've done a pretty good job of covering the topic because our callers have been listening but not raising their hand to ask questions, so I guess we've been answering their questions. We have had some good comments in chat. You've got some folks up there in Montana that are listening to this and have been making some comments, agreeing with you that they've contacted their title company and just got a complete runaround. And also posted Susan Phillips and Kalispell FBI as putting them on the chat so that people could see that, which I appreciate you doing that. One of our friends up in Montana is kind of making comments there tonight that's been helping out. So we got about 8 minutes left. Red, do you have any other comments or questions of Liam?
I think that a threat. You see, a lot of people are learning that if they have a communication from the IRS, that where the IRS is trying to terrorize somebody, they just write back and say, well, if the IRS has a valid claim, the only constitutional due process available is a Title 38 or a Rule 38 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, which provides for a Seventh Amendment common law jury trial. And when they do that, and of course then they say the reason we have to have a common law is because there isn't a judge in the country that is not a government agent, and there's not a judge that doesn't have a conflict of interest. Therefore, there has to be a Seventh Amendment common law jury to determine the facts of this controversy. And they never hear from the IRS again because the IRS doesn't want to go there. And so it will work in other cases, too. It has worked in some traffic cases that I know of. And so if give that some serious thought as to, hang this over the head of those people. Say, perhaps we should go to federal court with a Title 42 asking for damages using Rule 38 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and let a common law jury determine the facts of this controversy. And I'll tell you, I think you'll have some respect you didn't ever have before. I'm going to have to leave here, so we haven't got much time left, but I need to take care of some other calls. So I thank you for the program. I think it's worthwhile, and I hope we've helped some people up there by putting this on the air and letting people hear about it. So there's more of an awareness now of the problem. So thank you for coming on and giving us a good show. Good night.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Red, and we'll talk to you later.
Yeah.
God bless. Liam, we got 5 minutes left. How would you like to spend that time? Is there something else you'd like to talk about?
Well, you know, it's just important that we get the word out, I guess, you know, to protect myself and to protect the other victims in this controversy. And it's important that we link this up to the Water Compact to show what a serious issue we have here in Lake County. And that if we leave this unchecked and don't start swinging back, we're going to lose the whole county up here. And, you know, there's a lot of philosophers and stuff that have words of wisdom. I'm without them tonight. I'm pretty well taxed going over these facts and stuff right now. But all I can say is that, you know, it's just very imperative that we let the legislature know what's going on up here, that we seek justice, if it's a common law court or whatever. The more people that are involved, the more secure we'll all feel in our fight. And so it's important that we do team up. And, of course, we appreciate all the prayers and thoughts that people have in this fight. It's going to be, it should, in a common sense point of view, be a slam dunk case. But
well, let me ask you this question. Would you suggest that someone seek legal counsel if they have acquired land that is or was in an Indian trust or restricted Indian land? And would you even suggest or go so far as to recommend an attorney?
Well, at this point in time, my attorney is going to initiate a class action lawsuit. And like I said earlier, I spent over 4.5 years investigating this. At that point in time, once I break trail and get mine in front of a court, and we'll see how it comes out, my attorney will be sitting there with a class action suit that he'll be filing. And of course, class actions require a lot of publicity, and it requires people to come forward and put their name on the list. And so it'll take some time to organize a class action lawsuit and name them. If somebody wants to get an attorney, they sure can, but they're going to have a hell of a time finding out what I did. And they need a lot more information than I've given tonight. But, you know, the federal investigation, the FBI investigation, is certainly going to help to clarify some of the issues here. And, you know, federal government isn't the speediest group of people I've ever seen. But in the meantime, we just really got to raise a fuss, make our voices heard.
Well, you certainly are blessed to have an FBI office that's communicating and not actually creating the tyranny themselves, because in other places across the country, they haven't been so fortunate. The FBI has been as much of a problem as a part of the solution. And let me say this in our closing minute here, too. This is not all that isolated. There may not be other cases across the country that are exactly like this, but you know, the globalists and the United Nations and the Agenda 21 program and if you want to find out just how much of this is going on, you can check with one website is Defend Rural America. Kurt McKenzie, who's a friend of ours, you know, has been going after cases similar to this where the government has colluded in order to steal water rights, mineral rights, property. You know, you look right now in Rocky Mountain National Monument, for example, National Park here, they're threatening to not open the Trail Ridge Road as early as normal because of the sequester situation. Well, my question is why do the feds control any of this land within these states anyway? That's not what the Constitution says they're supposed to be doing. They're out there taking out small businesses. They're out there doing anything they can to destroy the individual unalienable rights. And this is just one more program that they are involved in, where individual rights are being trampled. And this is going on all over the country in a myriad of different forms and fashions and places. And so you're not alone out there, and we just commend you for fighting the fight.
I do want to add one comment, and you're right. In as much as we've got a national audience here tonight, this is not an isolated incident. I have information from the BLM that this tribe has taught another tribe east of the mountains how to do the same thing. So we know one other tribe right now that is perpetuating this same fraud using the same deeds and the same scheme. So, you know, this is not isolated to Lake County, Folsom, Montana area. It's east of the mountains, and I suspect that other tribes will attempt and, you know, are communicating the same scheme. Now that I'm catching up to them and the people here in Lake County will catch up to them, maybe we can put a halt to it, but it is happening in other areas of the country.
We are out of time. Thank you so much, Liam, for joining us tonight and sharing the way you have. And stay in touch with us and let us know what else we can do, because we will be glad to help out. If we need to do another show or we need to put the word out, just let us know. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great night. God bless.
You too. Goodbye.
Blessings of the land we love are really gifts from you.